Welcome to The Way Home with Laura Smith, the show that brings you wonderful guests, helpful advice, and uplifting stories. The Way Home, live inspired. Here's your host, Laura Smith.
Well, it is so wonderful to be with you. And yes, inspiration is the name of the game today. I bring two vibrant, wonderful, lovely ladies who just happen to be mother and daughter onto the program. Gloria Salmonson is 93, going on 23, and has been an actor and a voiceover artist since, get this, the 1940s. And her beautiful daughter, Karen, has been an author for many, many years. She writes very poignant, pithy, interesting, fun books, and she has a new one coming out. So we talked to these two dynamic ladies, and you are going to just love the spirit of both of them. You talk about inspirational people who, no matter at what age, are still bringing joy to the world with their gifts and their talents. Looking forward to that with the Salmonson ladies next on The Way Home.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Way Home with Laura Smith. Here's Laura.
Well, my goodness. This is one of those days that I talk about so often when I do the program where I just get so excited because the guests that I have on not only inspire me, bring me joy in my life, but often they are friends. And I'm talking friends that go back quite a while, people in the industry, but also people in their own right with such amazing careers. And I just love to highlight people who have really done incredible things with their lives and for a long time, in a very long time, and are still creating, even at the tender young age of almost 94. My guests are mother and daughter, both writers, both actors, both voice people, people who are in the arts, the creative arts, and have been doing this forever, it seems like. Karen Salmonson is my friend from when we ran a wonderful channel on SiriusXM back in 2005 through 2008 called The Lime Channel, and she had a daily program called Be Happy, Damn It. And she's a great coach and life coach and so much more. Her mother, Gloria, is here with us today, who has been an actress and a voiceover artist for how many years now, Gloria?
Well, I don't know whether we can count when I used to talk to myself in funny voices, but when I started doing it professionally, it was a little later. Although I was on the Horn and Hardart Children's Hour till I was in high school, and then I was embarrassed when I came into school and kids would say, "Ah, I saw you yesterday on the Horn and Hardart Children's Hour." It's hard to get a date for the prom. Children's Hour.
So you were famous then. I mean, you were well known. That was a big show back. Yeah. How many years ago? What year was that, Gloria?
Oh, in the around 1944.
Wow, unbelievable! So there you were, and you were now. Was this in Pennsylvania?
Yes, there was a. Well, actually, Horn and Hardart started in Philadelphia area, and they had the Horn and Hardart Children's Hour as well in New York.
I see.
This was the Philadelphia version.
Got it. And you? And what was the name of your character?
I played all kinds of people.
Oh, so it was a variety show.
Yes, a lot of people did sing and dance, and I just talked.
How wonderful. I can hear it in your voice. Such character. Karen, you have a similar voice to your mom's, but I know you mostly as a writer and as a radio host. You did a daily show. You were our morning show, basically, and you were what got people up and going. So excited. It was so much fun. But I remember meeting you through reading various books that you had written with your glorious sense of humor. And so it's just so great. You're not doing radio as much anymore, but I'm sure you're doing podcasts, and I know you're still writing books. How are you?
I am doing great. I remember I met you at a meeting where I was talking about my books. I was actually talking about a TV show, and you were there, and you said, "Oh my, your voice, you have a voice." I don't know if it was at the time. I'm like, is this good or bad? You have a voice for radio, which is usually like if you don't have the face for, you know, TV. But I was like, what? But then I knew what you were talking about immediately because my mother trained me to have a voice for radio. Because I remember when I was a kid, there's people in Philadelphia can have a very thick Philadelphia accent. So, yes. I mean, it's like just as thick as like Boston accents and stuff like that. And when I was a kid, I my mother would always correct me. And my joke about it, Mom, I hope you don't mind. I'm exaggerating it because I like humor. So the way I tell the story when you're not around, and I'm telling it when you're around, I would say to my, I could be talking to my mother about anything. I'd be like, and then Mom, the mugger ran after me. And she'd go, no, Karen, the mugger ran after you.
Yeah. Yes. It didn't matter that she was being chased down by a mugger. It's how you present it. Oh, that's hilarious.
Mom, I hope you don't mind. That's fine. But she trained me. So my voice is voiced by Gloria. So she definitely trained me for voiceovers. So thank you.
And your diction as well, because you don't have much of a Philadelphia accent at all. But a little more New York, I would say, at this point.
That might have taken over by now.
But what I love, in addition to the sound of your voice, is the voice that comes through in your books. It truly, you have this incredible, beautiful sense of humor, but it's really mixed with incredible knowledge and psychology and all sorts of tips for living happy, well, safe, healthy. You run the gamut with your advice, but you do it with so much fantastic tongue-in-cheek humor, and that's why the show Be Happy Damn It was what it was. You really had a lot of meaty topics, and you would talk to well-known psychologists and professionals, but it was humor was always a part of it. Would you say, and this is for you too, Gloria, would you say that humor kind of undergirds a lot of the work that you've done over the years? Is humor as important to you too, Gloria?
Absolutely.
So when you were doing these shows and doing these voiceovers, I would imagine, were you hired to do cartoons, that animated work?
Well, I have done that, but I worked on a child's television show, the Gene London Show. And it was the most popular show in the area. And I played all kinds of people. I played Winifred Throckmorton III. I was always threatened of that horrible Gene London fired. And I was Madame Natasha, the famous Russian gypsy crystal gazer. Have no fear, Madame Natasha is here. And I won't scare you.
Katie,
we did our own version of The Wizard of Oz. And guess what part I played? I wasn't Dorothy. I was the Wicked Witch of the West.
Oh, give us a little of that.
Oh, I would be afraid to scare you. My laugh alone, if I didn't have one child in the studio audience cry when they attended the taping, I wasn't doing my job. You don't want to hear that blood-curdling laugh, do you?
Maybe.
Please.
Okay. All right. Warn the engineer. Yeah!
Oh my goodness, that was chilling. I literally have goosebumps all over. That's incredible. Oh my word, I bet you did. I bet the children were like running out of there into their mom's arms.
Oh, they couldn't wait to come back.
Well, I have a funny story. I don't know if my mother will remember it. It might be my childhood memory of this too.
Oh,
but I remember for Halloween, because my mom was like famous, you know, they'd be like, that's the house where the Wicked Witch from Gene London Show lives. And then they would ring the doorbell and my mother would get on the intercom and she would do her Wicked Witch voice. Hello, my little whatever she would say. And then she'd do that laugh. And then in my mind, this is how I remember from my childhood, all the kids would run away and then we'd have extra chocolate.
Because exactly.
Everybody was afraid to stick around.
That would be madness, yet there'd be method to it.
Oh, my word. That is absolutely incredible. What an amazing thing to grow up together like this and you sharing your gifts and your talents. It's really not, you know, it's not everybody has that opportunity. I have a friend who's Paul Newman's daughter and Joanne Woodward's daughter. But, you know, it's kind of like that in a sense when you grow up with somebody who is a character actor and has all these voices and things. How did that play into the relationship? Did you have a close, fun relationship or was it more serious once you were out of character?
Well, when we were doing mother and daughter, sometimes it got serious, but the rest of the time. And what was wonderful, Karen had a photographic memory. I think she might still. I would get the script for the Gene London show, the children's show, the night before. And there occasionally would be lines written in there. When I wrote the show, it was written like a script with lines, but this was sort of a hodgepodge. In any case, I asked Karen, who may have been 5 or 6 and could read beautifully, to cue me. So I'd be there and I would be muffing up lines. Finally, she, after the 4th time, I see her. She's cueing me, but I don't see the script. I said, well, where's the script? Oh, I know it. She knew all the people's lines that were in that scene. She was amazing.
That's incredible.
That was. I knew she was pretty smart then. She was smarter than I was because I hadn't learned the lines yet. And she knew mine and Jean's and any other person who was in the scene.
Well, I can attest to that because I was the program director of that radio channel on Sirius XM, the Lime Channel. And what I marveled at when I listened to her, Karen is, like I said, she was very funny and very witty and everything, but she, so highly research. So whenever she had a show, she would dive all the way in with whatever the topic was and the guest, and she's full of facts. But again, she has this incredibly beautiful way of relaying it to the audience that's listening, makes it fun, it's upbeat, and all.
I remember, and this is a little trip down memory lane for my mom too. Yeah. When I was a kid, my mom used to drive to pick up my father from the train station. And there was this little, like, I don't know what we'd call it, like a five and dime type of place across the street from the train station where they sold magazines and candy bars and all of this. And I would go across the street and I would buy Psychology Today magazine and Mad magazine and come back and read them. And I sometimes think about it because I was like saying, I love psychology, but I love humor. And sometimes I think that my books are like if you took Psychology Today magazine, took Mad magazine, put them in a blender, press frappe, you'd get my books. Because I do that, and that's what my brain was fed on when I was growing up, both.
That is a brilliant assessment of your work and how it comes across, I would say. I'm trying to find the names of all the books that you've written. So many of them are so funny and so good. Say a bunch of them for us so people can get an idea.
Well, the one, How to Be Happy, Damn It, is pretty well known. It was in a Eminem video. You see him with the book, because the book cover was like bright orange and like the name How to Be Happy, Damn It. So you pan him and he's reading How to Be Happy, Damn It in the video. That one sold very well. And then the Bounce Back book, which had a red rubber cover on the outside and inside resiliency, psychology, techniques, Think Happy, Life is Long. Oh, this leads into my mother.
Yes.
I'm a late in life mom and I promised my son that I would live to 100. He asked me to live to 200, but I bargained him down to 100, and then he accepted my counteroffer. And then I decided to write this book with the longevity tips because I love research. I'm kind of a research geek. And I figured, why not sell the book on this to a publisher? And then they pay me to research longevity. So I got this deal to write a longevity book, which was called Life is Long, 50 plus ways to live a little closer to forever. And then there was an audio deal with it. And I asked my mom, because she's a famous voiceover artist, to be the narrator for Life is Long. And she narrated the book for me.
The biggest thrill for me was having that opportunity to do the reading of the book, the audio book of Karen's writing. I mean, it was like a full circle to come and have the opportunity to do the audible version of Karen's book.
I'm
thrilled to pieces.
What could be better? It really, truly, you're right. It's a full circle moment for sure and shows how the talent goes. Now, I remember meeting your son, Ari, and you did have him much later in life. people would be astounded to know, because you look, Karen, you're so young. In fact, we're almost the same age. So I'm going to just say, yes, you're very young. But Ari, I met him as a little boy, your son, and he also is extremely precocious and interesting. Yeah. And yeah. Fantastic. So I haven't seen him since he was a little boy, like at 3 years old. How old is he now?
14.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
I'm proud to say he's getting like straight A's and he's putting into the honors thing. My mother has a funny story about Ari that I forgot about. See, she's got a better memory than me, I guess. Mom, do you remember that story you told me when I was visiting you last about the word that my brother?
Oh, yes, yes. Ari said? He was three years old, I don't, maybe four. And we're walking down the street. Ari is in the middle, Karen and I on either side. And Karen said something to him, and I hear Ari's response. Well, it's all right, but with one caveat. So I said, what did you say, Ari? I couldn't believe my ears. I said, he says, well, I told mommy with one caveat I would do that.
And then he said, but the caveat was.
And I said, well, what's a caveat? And he told me. I was so impressed. I thought he's another little Karen here.
He is. He was. When I met him, that's exactly what he was like. And it doesn't surprise me at all. And I will be very interested in finding out what he does, whether it's rocket science, writing his own books, being an actor, three at the same time.
Yes, I predict that he could do all of those. He is an amazing child, not because I'm a grandmother, not because I'm Karen's mother, but because that's who he is. It's like anything he has an interest in becomes something that he's excellent in. When he learned to play chess. Remember, Karen?
Yeah.
They thought he was so wonderful and he had such a spirit about him that he would be good to go to tournaments, because most kids who play chess are sort of, you know, boring, not Ari. But he decided he knew chess now. Let's go on to the next thing. Is that right? That's why I remember.
Not right. Yeah. They came up to me and said, your son, he went to chess summer camp. And then they said, you know, your son has what it takes to do like the chess, like competition-y things. And we did that for a while, but then he lost interest. It was just like, it wasn't him. He's actually funny. And I think he found it for him. It wasn't as fun as some of the other fun things he wants to do.
So he's got the fun and funny gene from both his grandmother and his mother. My guests are today Gloria and Karen Salmonson. Gloria is an actress extraordinaire for how many years now? 75 years?
As a professional, I probably started in the late 60s.
Okay. Sorry, I'm aging you even more.
Yeah, I did.
Horton Hard Arts. So Horton Hard Arts was when you were a teenager.
Oh, that's when I was a kid. But I did do a couple of things for which I was paid before I became a professional in the world. But I did a lot of commercials. And I would say in the Philadelphia market, if you looked at TV or radio, listened to radio, that you would hear me at some point. Sometimes in commercials, one after another. It was kind of exciting. One time I went into a store when I first started doing commercials. It was just a plain little store. They had a radio perched up in the corner in the ceiling. And as I walked in there, I started coming out of the radio. And I hadn't heard myself like that before. I got so excited. I started jumping up and down saying, it's me, it's me, and pointing up at the ceiling. There were several other people in the store seeing me jumping up and pointing at the ceiling, and they left.
Oh, they left.
They thought there was some crazy woman.
They didn't know why she was pointing, you know,
pointing
from the voiceover.
Yes, yeah.
It's me, and I'm pointing up at the ceiling.
That's beautiful. You know, it makes me happy, because that's one thing about our business is that, you know, maybe movie stars, you know, they look for the younger ones. But when it comes to voice, somebody asked someone at the radio station, Laura has a really interesting voice. How old is she? Like 30? And I said, I hope you told them yes. And then I hope they never meet me in person, because then they'll see the real thing. But it's interesting. People who use their voices in those various places, that you can do it forever, just like writing, like you do, Karen. Karen, you're working on a new book that is coming out the summer of 25. Well, this summer, okay, because last year we were talking about it, but it's coming out this year. Tell us about the book. I know it's, you can get a pre-order already.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm really excited about this book. It's called Your To Die For Life, How to Maximize Joy and Minimize Regret Before Your Time Runs Out. And it's about a subject that isn't something that people like to talk about. So I'm adding my humor into it to try to make it something that I hope people will start to talk about. And that's death and mortality awareness. Because I believe that when you live aware that your life is finite, you live better. That death can breathe new life into you, and you stop putting off things to someday and you start doing them more. And so in the book, I have people reverse engineer their life by thinking about how they want to feel on their deathbed and actually writing their eulogy. But people who don't want to write their eulogy, I have a Mad Libs template of a eulogy, and you fill in the blanks. And then you look at current you versus aspirational eulogy you, and you figure out, I help you to figure out the bridge habits to help you to become aspirational eulogy you.
Karen, that is so incredible. I think it's brilliant. I think it's something that what you're doing is taking something that's inevitable for all of us, and you're inviting people. It's an invitation to maybe write a different script for yourself based on what you're willing to look at now before it comes. I think that is so incredibly important. And again, you've done so much research behind it, but you offer it in the most human of ways, and always with a smile and a laugh. And it's always something very beautiful. Give us the title one more time. If someone wants to pre-order it, it will be out the summer of 25 this year.
It's called You're to Die For Life. So that's, I'll tell you the subtitle, but I'm going to confuse you. You just have to memorize You're to Die For Life. That's the book.
You're to Die For Life. Karen Salmonson is the author. And you can find everything that Karen does at notsalmon.com. Do you still do it there?
Yeah.
That was your website all these 20 years ago when we worked together.
Yeah.
So notsalmon.com. And salmon is spelled like the fish. Notsalmon.com, because Salmonson is actually spelled like salmon with an S-O-H-N on the end. And for you, Miss Gloria, you are still, have you gotten any recent work in voiceovers or acting?
Oh, yes. I've moved to a senior residence that is a very active place. And I performed with another actress that I met here and hadn't worked with her for 45 years. We were cast in a play 45 years ago. The first week I moved in, she also moved in. I had only seen her a couple of times in between and never worked with her. And we did a wonderful play that had been a runner-up for the Pulitzer Prize for drama when it came out. It was called Collected Stories, with only two women in it, and we were perfectly cast in both roles, in each of the roles. So we did do that to an enormous amount of acclaim. And also,
you did it again when you met each other now? You did it?
We hadn't played in it before, but we did it here. And I think Karen came in to
see. I did, and you were wonderful.
Well,
that's a lot of lines to learn. You did great.
I'm going to, they asked me to do a commercial for the facility here. And I'm excited about that. I'm doing that in March.
Oh, that's incredible. So 93 years old, still performing, still getting a paycheck for what you do, I hope. I hope so, too. And I know, Karen, that you have sold over 2 million books worldwide, and your next one is going to be just as extraordinary. So I definitely want to have you back when you do that. Now, you living in Pennsylvania, Bucks County, Gloria, and you, Karen, in New York City. How often do you get to see each other very much? Do you take Ari over to Bucks County? How is it?
Trying to do it more. When Ari was younger, it was more difficult and challenging. He also gets car sick. And every time we take the train in, and pretty much every time my brother has picked me and Ari up in the car, my son has vomited all over my brother's
car. His brand new car. Remember that one?
Yes, a very fancy schmancy car.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Sports. So it's almost funny, but to me, it's funny because he's my brother. To him, it might not be funny. Like,
probably not.
Yeah. But
my goodness.
But I just realized I told my mom this, that last time I took the train in and then I took the Uber to her thing. And then on the way back, when I was going to take, I was in the Uber and I was going back to the train, I got a notice that the train was like something like 3 hours late. And I said to the Uber guy, "Hey, could you drive me back to New York?" And it was actually cheaper and faster. It was indirect to go from Philadelphia to Bucks County. And he told me a price that was less and faster. And so now I'm just going to come in by Uber.
By Uber.
Yeah. I think
faster and cheaper than taking the train.
Door to door. Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah. So that's what I'm going to do for me. And then it makes it easier because sometimes it's like planning it and then you have it. So she's going to be seeing.
Well, I'm looking forward to your next visit.
Isn't that wonderful? She'll just be driving in, no stops at all.
Right.
And Gloria, are you going to be performing with your friend, your fellow actress friend there anytime soon again? Or was that a one-time specialty?
Well, that was a really, it's a two-hour full-length play with only two people in it. It was quite a production. We're doing other things, and they have a very active theater here. You have to really book it because they have so many things going on. I'm really enjoying living here because it has enabled me to be more active in the areas that I enjoy being active in than when I lived in Elkins Park, Pennsylvania. So I feel like I have uploaded a much better lifestyle in just 2 years.
That is fantastic.
And by the way, when I have visited her, my mom is like the movie star of the place. Like, I don't know how to explain it. You sit at my mother's table. Everybody's coming over. Hi.
Everyone knows who I am.
Because they know her from her plays and also from just being her, because she's very outgoing and funny and charismatic. So I felt like I was sitting with like the movie star of the place. Everybody kept coming over.
As you were.
I think they wanted to meet Karen, frankly.
And
talk about her a lot.
Well, people don't. I do this whenever I do these interviews. I actually do them over Zoom. So I have the great fortune of looking at both of you, who are so beautiful. But interestingly enough, both of you show up on Zoom with this ornate and incredible neck piece on, a necklace that is so gorgeous. And the two of you could be sisters. You're absolutely beautiful. And I'm so grateful that you came on today, because it's what it to me is. We talk about this program, The Way Home, with Laura Smith, as being to really highlight inspirational stories. You both are inspiration on legs and then some. And you truly bring this beautiful joie de vivre, this love of life, this wonderful sense of humor, this beautiful talent. Both of you have it and using it. And 93 going on 23 for Gloria. And Karen is just ageless and evergreen, in the words of Barbara Streisand. So I forever thank you. I look so forward. I'm so grateful to finally meet you, Gloria, after all these years of hearing about you. And Karen, we are going to get your book, which is
called You're to Die for Life. And it's available on notsalmon.com, because nobody can spell Salmon's in my last name. So I'm always going, not salmon. So that's why it's called notsalmon.com.
Notsalmon.com. You can find her and Gloria Salmonson as well. If you Google her, you'll see different things that she has done. I am so grateful and grateful that you're both in the world shining your light. Give a big hug and kiss to Ari, your beautiful son, for me, from Aunt Laura from so many years ago. And thank you. You'll both have to come back on, because that's just the way it is with The Way Home. Once you're on, you got to come back.
Well, you don't have to twist my arm. I'm tons of little anecdotes.
Love it. Thank you both, Karen and Gloria Salmonson, mother and daughter, and so much more. Thank you. Go to notsalmon.com, notsalmon.com, and see all of Karen's books that are available there. And yes, lots of love to both of you. We'll see you next time on the way home.
Right back to you.
Right back at you. Yes.
Mwah. Mwah. You're listening to The Way Home. Mwah.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Way Home with Laura Smith. Here's Laura.
Well, about a year ago, should I say? Oh, no, not even. I was going to say a year ago this summer, but actually it was this summer. So about a half a year ago, I had a new series that I introduced to the program just called Summer Reading Series. And I was able to bring forth a whole bunch of different authors from with different genres of books. And one of them that was truly stood out to me in terms of just being such a fun conversation and the book sounding so delicious was from a lady by the name of Fionn Fox Faraday. And I say that in that way because she's got an incredible backstory to her book. She's actually an ICU nurse and someone who's in the pulmonary healing business as a doctor full time. But she found herself not only in a pandemic before it, also alleviating stress by writing when she was on home leave for something medical that she was going through herself. But then when the pandemic came, she found herself writing more and more. So Fionn started writing, and much to her surprise, she kept writing. And all of a sudden, a series was born called Mates of the Alliance. It is a mixture of romance with intergalactic sci-fi and with a whole dose of reality because of the background of her medical foundation. And you put all of it together and you get what is a second installment in the Mates of Alliance with Darzik. Mates of Alliance. It's after Cairn, which was in the summer. I have never heard a story like yours and how you started writing and how all of a sudden it has taken off to such an extent. And yet you're still at the hospital, right?
Yeah, I'm still working, and writing is how I cope with stress. So any kind of unhappiness or pressure, I just kind of channel into writing. I know it's a good way to turn maybe something negative into something positive. And it's fun. And these characters, I've lived in this world for about 3 years now, and they have become very dear friends, and they have developed very distinct personalities, and they're a lot of fun to write. And then, you know, they get a little grumpy if I don't write. They'll be like, "You've kind of ignored us, and it's been a couple of weeks. When are you gonna, you know, come back and let us know what the next little turn of the page and chapter is going to be? Because we've been waiting not very patiently."
Authors often comment to me how the characters in their books, even if they are fictional, take on a life of their own and almost become real to the one writing them. I guess they would have to be, in order for a book to be truly exciting and interesting and to grab your attention, there has to be a sense that these characters and these people are actually real. And so obviously yours luring you back to the, you know, the writing table all the time is proof that they need to get out, and you're finding great joy in writing them. I guess it's not something that you set out to do, obviously, when you said, let me write to just express myself or, you know, get some stress off my chest. Were you a writer as a young girl?
I kind of was. I wrote some very dramatic and probably rather cheesy poetry.
Okay. Well, yeah. I think we probably all did to some extent. But it sounds like, you know, you're getting reviewed now with your Mates of the Alliance series, and you're getting good reviews. They're liking them. These online, you know, people who sit and grade books all the time. And when I say grade, they read them and they like to give you a certain amount of stars or not. You're getting really good feedback, and people are loving the books and the characters.
Well, it's definitely a incredible honor that people enjoy reading about these characters, because they really do seem very real. you know, and they're sort of become part of my family. And I actually met somebody on Instagram because of the book, she said it sounded really interesting. And she's become a very dear friend over the past 9 months or so. And she'll be like, so what's going on with so-and-so characters? Like, you know, I'll give her a little snippet. She's like, when are you going to release it so I can read it?
Exactly. Well, I'm sure that's the way it is. So let's give the audience a grasp of the series and what the premise is underneath it, being that it is sci-fi, but it's also romance. The Mates of the Alliance. So are these intergalactical beings with humans that end up relating to each other and dancing in a relationship type of thing?
Yes. Basically, the premise is that Earth is attacked by a race of hostile aliens who are intent on harvesting the ocean. And our heroes are dispatched to repel the attack, and that is their job. They are like the protectorate arm of a galactic alliance. And when they are done sending the hostile aliens in full retreat, they realize they can't leave the Earth because we're in such dire straits that we would not survive without their help. So they end up being posted to our planet, and in the process of rehab, some of their officers meet and fall in love with some humans, initially people at the hospital, because that's their first contact. And basically, it's a kind of like a comparison, because they're very, very different. And when they first see each other, or especially when the human characters first see these aliens, all they see is they're about 7.5 feet tall. They've got fangs, they've got claws, they've got fur, and they look they're very military looking. They're very muscular. They're very intimidating. They look like gladiators. And as they get to know them, all they see, they don't see their appearance anymore. They just see their mate. So it's about looking under the superficial differences and finding out how much they really have in common.
It sounds like a sort of a space age Beauty and the Beast kind of thing.
Kind of, sort of. And what's interesting is that as the characters go on, book two is about the first two characters in book one. It's about their best friends. And the female character was the victim of a date rape, but basically she was drugged and assaulted. So it's about how she survives and she reclaims her life and decides that she's not going to be a victim anymore, and that she has control of her life and she wants to have a full life and find love, find family. And her partner has been patiently waiting for her. And what he doesn't know is that she's done waiting, and he's been waiting in the wings. He's devoted. He's committed. He's faithful, and he's completely, utterly hers. And he's not about to know what's going to hit him, because she's decided that she knows what she wants and what she needs, and that she's not going to let, you know, what she's been through in the past control her future. Mm-hmm. And that's her life, and she's going to take it back.
And then she meets Darzik.
Yes. And he's been watching her, and she knows that she's really attracted to him, but she's so afraid. And then she finally takes that leap of faith.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because in terms of your background, obviously you're in the medical profession on a daily basis, very high pressure ICU work and pulmonary focus. But you also include whatever is your fascination with and experience with the military. And where does that play into your background and why you would write about that in your books?
Well, a lot of my family have been military. My dad was in the Army. My brother was in the Air Force. My kids were in the Coast Guard. My husband was in the Army. And, you know, without our military, we wouldn't be leading the lives that we do. It's because of them that we have the freedoms that we enjoy. And mm-hmm. I wanted to, you know, dedicate this in part to them. And it's a kind of like a written thank you for all they do, and also for the healthcare workers for the same thing, because a lot of times we take them for granted because they're there. And especially with the military, sometimes we don't see it because they're posted overseas or we're someplace where there aren't any bases, but they are what enables us to lead the life of freedoms that we do.
Absolutely. I was just going to remind people that I'm speaking with Fionn Fox Faraday. She's a writer. She's, as I mentioned, she works in the medical profession, but she's been writing on the side, and these books are taking on a life of their own. And now she's in a second in a series. The first one was called Cairn, also about an alien and human interaction and love story that comes to life. And now the second one, which is character Darzik, it's said it's a slow and sensual follow-up to the steamy kickoff that's found in the first one. So this continues throughout it. And a lot of people that review your books are saying the same thing. Very steamy, very romantic, very real in that context. Is that fun to write literature like this?
It's a lot of fun. They completely immerse themselves in each other. And the aliens actually don't have much in the way of physical experience at all. Their lives have been devoted to protection. They're battle-hardened warriors of a generations-long war at this point. And in their mates, they find the hope, the acceptance, the peace, the joy, and the pure love they never knew really could be theirs or even existed. So because of that, they completely treasure their mates, and they completely immerse themselves in it. And it's interesting because on the human side of it, they find safety, which maybe isn't the most exciting word or concept, but to them, the safety means the trust and the freedom to completely commit themselves to the bond that's being to resonate between them and their mates. Mm-hmm. And it's a thing of beauty, because yes, there's a lot of physical intimacy, and it's very powerful because it's always in the context of emotion. It's not just done because they are consumed by attraction, and because it is very irresistible, but it's a manifestation of their emotions.
And so, there's also apparently a lot of wordplay as well. You enjoy the language when you write. You enjoy expressing language, and so it's probably, you know, it's got a little bit more depth to it than just your typical dime store, you know, romance novel.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot more depth to it than that. I've talked to you now. This is the second time, and I enjoy it because I do love your use of words. And what a great feeling it must be to have this full-time job in the medical profession, but be able to escape through your books and now, but have them be actually taken seriously in the literary realm and actually be seen as a writer. That must be fun for you. When you go to work, does everybody know about your other side of your life?
To some degree they do. Some of my friends who are IC nurses know. And all of the people in my office definitely know. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. And there's a little teasing involved, but I think it's a great way for them to release stress. And they get really tickled because a lot of the characters, especially book two, because she's an ICU nurse, a charge nurse, actually, she's a composite of a lot of my friends. A lot of their character traits and some of the things they say are exactly what comes out of the book, because that's what some of the ICU people will say.
Uh-huh. So, and I like that too, when there's expertise in it, even though it's a novel, there's expertise so that you feel like you're kind of learning something as you go, you know, in addition to just escaping and having a great, you know, romp through a good book. You've got detail there, like you said, of the military, of the medical profession that really lends credence to the backdrop of it because of your true involvement in both of those realms. So Fionn Fox Faraday, this is the second. The first one, Cairn, Mates of the Alliance. This one, Darzik, Mates of the Alliance. How many more Mates of the Alliance are we going to be seeing from you?
As long as they keep telling their stories, I'm going to keep on writing. I'm actually sort of stuck, actually, on the current book because and the main character has kind of been knocking on the window, so to speak, of my mind going, you've not written in about a month. Have you forgotten about me? But yeah, so he's book 10. He was supposed to be book 5, and I got sidetracked by other characters that just demanded to tell their story because it was just, I couldn't resist because their story was so compelling. And he's like, you know, you're late with me anyway, and now you're putting me back further. So I need a little attention. That's what he's saying.
So you mean to tell me there's almost 10 books in the series so far, and we're only on book 2 in terms of talking about it and it being published?
Yes, I've only published 2, but the rest of them are done. They're just kind of sitting in cyberspace on my Kindle.
Well, I just love it. I love the story behind the story, and the story sounds so fabulous and fun. You know, in the winter, it's fun to cozy up with a book in front of the fire or in our best, warmest slippers and blanket and truly, you know, get lost in a good book. So, and right now is one of those times in history where I think a little escape could do us all a bit of good. Fionn Fox Faraday, where can your books be purchased and found?
Mainly Amazon, also on Barnes & Noble, and they're available both in Kindle and in paperback form. Now, if people like animals, they will like this because in my world, animals are sentient and they can communicate. And some of my favorite characters are some of the animal characters that have kind of just, you know, written their own story. For people who want like a kind of like a common point, if they like Ruby Dixon, Ice Planet Barbarians, if they like Shape of Water, if they like Beauty and the Beast, and if they like Avatar, they'll probably get a kick out of The Mates of the Alliance. There's a lot of humor. Picture aliens who have translators and are extremely concrete, and pair that with our use of slang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds like a lot of fun. Fionn Fox Faraday, everyone, look her up. Mates of the Alliance is the series. You're going to have 10 of them at your disposal eventually. But right now, Darzik is out and ready to be read and purchased and all the rest of it. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Way Home. I really love having you on.
Thank you so much, Laura. It's always a pleasure talking with you. And this has been so much fun. Thank you for making it so easy and spontaneous and natural. I really appreciate it.
Likewise, right back at you. Thank you so much. Fionn Fox Faraday, Darzik, Mates of the Alliance, and Cairn, Mates of the Alliance. Go find it now and read all winter long.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Way Home with Laura Smith. Here's Laura.
Oh, my goodness. The time flies when you're having fun, as we always say just about every week, and especially when we have really good news to look forward to. Always at the end of a show, I love the stories you come up with, Jim Cleefield, because you find them a lot of times before a lot of the rest of the people are reporting on them. So I'm always happy for that. But I just love them. So what do you have today to make us feel good as we head on into the work week?
Well, we're going to go to the Motor City, Detroit, for this wonderful story. And it's a very heartwarming story, LJ. I'll tell you why. Every day, we know firefighters are hailed as heroes. They save lives every single day, right? Well, for one firefighter in particular, Mac Dunna, in the Detroit Fire Department, you might say the tables have turned for him. I'll tell you why, because he's the one whose life was needs saving. The reason is because he gives credit to a little friend of his with four legs, his dog, Mia. I'll tell you why. For 7 years, Matt has been in the Detroit Fire Department working very hard, saving lives, but he's really been having a rough, rough time. And I can kind of empathize with this part. He's had financial struggles, stress on the job, life challenges, you name it. I mean, he's just really was at his low point, so much so that he decided just, I don't think I can go on anymore. I'm going to end it. So he was in the basement of his home one night, and he's sitting there, and he has a gun right next to him, and he's about to pull the trigger. When the miracle of miracles have happened, his dog, Mia, heard him about to pull the trigger. He caught the gun, and she suddenly stopped and just started licking him, just loving him as if to say, don't do this, don't do this. I'm here for you. You know, we're family. It's just a wonderful thing. And he decided it just was okay, you know, that his dog, Mia, was there for him. And he realized, you know, somebody loves him, that it's not the end of the world. That, again, it's another reason why dogs, you know, are so wonderful to all of us. We all need them in our lives. I certainly do. And anyway, so he realized he needed some help. So a couple of weeks later, he decided to reach out to a behavioral therapy center, and he's getting the help he needs, I'm happy to say. And the really good news about all this, besides the dog saving his life, is that he's not only getting the help he needs, but he's spending more time with his Mia, and rightfully so. I don't know if he's still working or not as a firefighter. He's been at it for 7 years. But he realizes, you know, what's really important. Yes, firefighters are a very important job, but really being around family or friends, or in this case, an animal like a dog, really was a true lifesaver. So, yes, I mean, the firefighters, we hail them as heroes, but again, dogs are lifesavers just as much. And I'm very happy for him. And hopefully now with the help he's going to get, that he'll get his life back on track and really realize what's important to him, why, you know, he needs to be happy and good for him.
Praise the Lord. Wow. That is incredible. That is so frightening to even contemplate. But there was that dog. Animals have such incredible instincts, with especially with their owners. And so it doesn't surprise me that that's the way Mia, his dog, reacted. She knew probably with that own internal, you know, GPS that they have, that he was suffering and he was in trouble. And her instinct was to heal. And again, I've said this before on the show, but spell the word dog backwards and what do you have?
G-O-D, right?
There
dog.
You go.
That's God.
So I love that. Thank you so much. And yes, our first responders, are they go through a lot and they see so much. And it must be very traumatic for so many of them. But like you said, and love of family and love of your pet sometimes that's all you need, just a connection and a relationship with your furry one. And you being a dog walker in your other part of your life besides broadcasting, you probably know that more than any of us.
Every part of that. Dogs are the best therapy in the world. I've said it online. I'm sure I've said it on this show, and I've said it to friends and family. It's really true.
It absolutely is. Well, on that note, I wish everyone a beautiful week with the ones you love, including your furry ones. And thank you to Bob Small, our producer of The Way Home. He's like therapy, too. You don't always hear him, but he's the quiet presence in the corner, pushes the buttons and makes you feel like, you know what? Everything's going to be okay.
I hope so.
All right. We'll see you next time. Have a wonderful week, everyone. God bless. From The Way Home, I'm Laura Smith.